Hello and welcome to Cognitive Liberty Airwaves. Today we have Daniel Pinchbeck, author of Breaking Open the Head, A Psychedelic Journey into the Heart of Modern Day Shamanism. Daniel, welcome. Thank you so much for coming on my Binghamton University radio program. This is a treat. I first heard you on Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell, and I immediately bought your book, read it.
Yes.
Have you heard anything I've said, Daniel?
Yes, I've heard it all, yeah.
I don't know, it's quite interesting, and I've kind of been, you know, occasionally typing you into Google to see what you've been up to, and it seems like you're keeping yourself very busy with your, you have two new projects. Would you like to talk about those?
Sure, briefly? Well, I mean, the main thing is I've been working since the last book on another book, which is tentatively titled 2012, subtitled The Return of Quetzalcoatl, which I probably still mispronounce, but basically... During the first book, I went through a number of shamanic experiences, and I went down to West Africa. I went through tribal initiation in Gabon, and took ayahuasca with shamans in Ecuador, and visited Mazatec shamans who work with mushrooms, and had a whole number of experiences that ended up pretty much convincing me that the shamanic sort of perspective on reality was in some ways more truthful than the materialist paradigm I've been brought up in. I had a lot of synchronicities and prophetic foretellings that turned out to be true. Mm-hmm. So the more I sort of sat with this material, but I also had some seriously like occult experiences with poltergeist phenomena and crazy stuff happening.
With your dipropyltryptamine.
Yeah, yeah, good memory, right? Yeah. So the more I sort of sat with this material, the more I thought to myself that if these cultures were right about so much that the Western modern mind has repressed and ignored, then we probably have to take seriously what they're saying about, you know, what's going to happen in the future, or at least give it a serious inspection. So then I began to study the Mayan prophecies, which there's been a number of kind of independent scholars writing about the year 2012, which is kind of either the end of the Mayan calendar or the end of a great cycle of over 5,000 years. Mm-hmm. And it seems like they actually developed a highly sophisticated and very different model of time than the typical model that we have in the Western world, which is a kind of linear spatial model. Their model of time is kind of fractal. It sort of moves in these different spirals, and it's really about time linked to the evolution of consciousness. And what different thinkers have kind of teased out of this is that they somehow, through their own visionary explorations, beamed into the fact that the Earth is on a kind of... like a training program. It's kind of like a fetal development cycle, where we birth into higher consciousness around the year 2012.
Right. Does that? I know you're familiar with Terence McKenna, and in his book Invisible Landscapes, he got really into the whole exploring time and how we've basically perverted it. And wasn't he more about the I Ching and what that said about time?
Well, it's actually pretty incredible because he kind of came through all this stuff separate from the Mayans, which he didn't know about at all intuitively, basically guided by his experiences with mushrooms, which the Mayans were also using. And kind of, you know, ended up with a system, which he called the time wave, which is pretty much identical to what the Mayans are talking about. But it's been much more systematically elaborated by people since, including Jose Arguelles, this writer John Major Jenkins, and a Swedish biologist, Carl Johan Kalman, who has a book called The Mayan Calendar, The Transformation of Consciousness. And, I mean, the I Ching plays a big role in Arguelles's kind of understanding of this Mayan material. It's long to go into, but I'm totally blown away by what they found, and I feel that there's probably a lot of truth to what they're talking about.
Right. I think I told you when I invited you on the show, we were just Cognitive Liberty Airwaves. I don't know. We like to not we can't advocate psychedelic use because psychedelics are considered illegal, among the worst drugs in our country, and I think that's a bit silly. I don't know. Do you want to comment on cognitive liberty and how it kind of relates to you? I know you're doing this new magazine called Medicine, and it sounds great. Like, I read your description. I read what you wrote, and it just sounds great. It's much needed.
Psychedelics are only going to be a small part of that. But I think, in a weird way, like, I think there's some advantages to the fact that psychedelics are repressed and have been repressed since the 60s, and that I really don't think it's a thing that one should advocate for, as it's really a question of kind of individual intent, whether one is going to seek out knowledge about these things and then pursue it. You know, so I try to be careful not to advocate psychedelics myself, just because I'm not sure it's really right. I mean, it's really up to the individual. And, you know, in the 60s, you know, there was this huge momentum for a while, like Leary told, you know, people to tune in and drop out and turn on. And I think that was the wrong way to go about it, in that it sort of led to kind of frenzy and chaos. And what seems to be happening now, which, you know, McKenna also sort of recognized, is a more kind of self-selected entree into these other realities. Having said that, I think that, you know, psychedelics are going to have a huge part to play in the future as the current kind of social economic paradigm continues to crumble. I mean, one of the things I'm writing about in the new book is the Santo Daime, which is a religion based in Brazil that uses ayahuasca as its sacrament. And ayahuasca is a sort of beverage or a potion used throughout South America, throughout the Amazon, which is an incredible visionary psychedelic containing DMT, which is also a chemical that's in the brain and the spinal cord. So my sense from this religious practice and from other ayahuasca sessions that I've been into is that ayahuasca is going to really help us to kind of reaccess these lost domains of the psyche and the soul and the spirit, and help us kind of move forward into a different kind of framework.
I think that's fascinating. I mean, I know you talk about Rick Strassman, and I actually read him before I picked your book up. And, you know, he does the dimethyltryptamine, and he did all those trials. And it's just so hard. Like, you saw, like, what he was up against bringing that in, like, to be acceptable for modern science. And certainly I don't think he was satisfied, like, or with the acceptance or lack of in his medical community, like the people that were reading his results.
Yeah.
I mean, how can we, I certainly do think that there are important messages to bring back from those kind of experiences, but how can they be validated in this kind of, like, this kind of climate now, or like the climate that we live in? Is just socially, it's like, I think it's poo-pooed. I mean, it was poo-pooed when I was talking to my evolutionary biology professor, trying to talk to him seriously about these things, and, you know, he kind of chucks it up to be like a naive and like holistic science kind of naivety.
Well, yeah, I mean, what we have here is a kind of paradigm clash. You know, there's and, you know, from my understanding of what's happening, what's going to happen, that's part of the sort of evolutionary process. And that happens on a lot of different levels. A kind of old paradigm kind of stabilizes and then sort of coagulates and becomes a sort of crust. And then that crust becomes very resistant to new information. And what seems to be with the psychedelic experience or the sort of reintroduction of shamanism into our world is that it seems to be a several stage process, which the 60s were kind of first stage, a kind of mass shamanic initiation, where this information was reintroduced to the culture and where it filtered into the media. You know, it sort of became part of our kind of background culture. You know, and of course, all the 60s psychedelic rock is still, you know, a huge cultural phenomenon. So I sort of see that as step one, and that we're still sort of in the midst of step two. And step three will be could be a kind of real breakthrough where there's a kind of enough people have reached a different level of consciousness about the subject where that new understanding just permeates.
That's going to be crazy still, you know, what it does.
We're really in the trenches of that paradigm war right now, definitely.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, maybe you've thought about it more, but I mean, what do you think that's going to do to, I mean, just language and vocabulary, and I mean, it just seems like it would be such a massive, massive change.
Yeah, well, I mean, it will be a massive change, but the paradigm that we're working with has really topped out, you know, so it's necessary to create the language and the articulation that allows us to sort of bring this material into, you know, the reality that we're in. I mean, in terms of shamanism and sort of the magical approach, I mean, people who are really important are people like Carl Jung and the visionary Austrian philosopher Rudolf Steiner, who have created a whole template and whole and various different ways of thinking about this stuff really intellectually. And of course, Steiner and Carl Jung are like exactly the people that you just don't get to study in universities.
No.
They're completely off the curriculum. That's because it's very threatening. I mean, Jung realized that that there was the basic reality of the psyche, that from what he could understand, the psyche was really all that was real, which is exactly what, you know, the Buddhists say, that there's only this kind of universal consciousness and the world itself is Maya. But we have not been able to fully realize that. We haven't been able to integrate that understanding.
Because we're just like little... we're just like little rats in a rat race. I've talked to, you know, other students here, and I mean, that's how people feel. I mean, I have like my assigned reading lists, which are like they're... You know, and then I have this book, or this pile of books, like, on the side, which, you know, like Fritjof Capra and Bill name some, like, just all the books you wish you could read and you wish your teachers would assign to you.
Right.
And
I mean, there are a few schools where that would be the curriculum. I think the California Integrated...
Which schools you can say this? Transfer people.
California Integrated something or other program in San Francisco. I can't remember the name.
Is that New College, California?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I guess... But, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's what's going on. I mean, you know, one way I've sort of realized to think about it is that I got really interested in Buckminster Fuller was talking about how evolution takes place through this process of precession, where there's like this huge momentum in one direction, which seems to just lead towards, you know, sort of the abyss and destruction. I mean, you could look at like the incredible gravitational force of the sun, you know, that's pulling the Earth towards it. And then there's this momentum out, you know, which would bring the Earth into sort of absolute vacant space. But somehow in between these momentums, you know, evolution sort of takes place. And I think that's what we experience in our own lives. I mean, there's this huge momentum into this kind of incredibly boring academic or corporate reality that has no meaning whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to sort of fight against that. But in the fight against that, you become stronger. You sort of intensify your consciousness. And if you can carve out the space to explore these other areas, you really make progress. And that was one of the things that, you know, in Breaking Open the Head, I write about the Burning Man Festival. And it was really when I went there that I had this amazing understanding that this incredible underground progress had been taking place since the 60s.
Right.
It's just that you don't really see it until you're suddenly there with, you know, 30 or 40,000 other people who made the same jump. And it gives you an incredible boost in understanding, you know, what is actually possible now and the kind of civilization, you know, based on kind of personal liberation, you know, freedom from work and propaganda, you know, freedom to create one's own reality, you know, that is possible to us.
Right.
And, you know, one, you know, interesting about this whole Mayan calendar stuff is that according to this guy Carl Kalman's reading of it, around 2008, there's going to be a huge kind of collapse of the current paradigm. It's hard to explain, but on his sort of fractal model, there's always this kind of time of ultimate darkness where the sort of the current kind of structure kind of self-destructs. And I think that's going to be the point where there's going to be the possibility to reinstitute a real alternative paradigm. And that's completely the purpose of this magazine, Medicine. It's not just about psychedelics, but really trying to, if we can get it going in time, to sort of offer the tools for a whole alternative paradigm, which would include like relocalizing industry, bioremediation of toxified lands and waters and wetlands, alternative currencies, ways to rethink economies, alternative energy systems. I mean, this is all kind of available, and people have been working on this in the margins, like really, really hard since the 60s. There's an incredible website called thebioneers.org, which is an incredible compilation of visionaries, activists, design scientists, ecologists who've put together all these different programs, but the kind of collective will hasn't yet been there to make it a reality.
Right.
They have a series of video presentations that I've seen on Free Speech TV that are absolutely phenomenal,
yeah.
The Bioneers.
So it's like the pieces are in place. It's just that until sort of the crisis hits, the will isn't there. But those of us who begin to realize that the current paradigm is not holding, you know, have to carve out the space and time to, you know, conceive of an alternative and actually be ready to actualize it.
So do you want to be a modern-day Tim Leary and tell people to tune in and drop out? I just wish I could, but then, like...
I don't think that's the right approach.
Not everyone, like, is taking psychedelics or anything, but I just feel like kids, I think, like, the biggest complaint I hear, it's, like, very stressful. It's, like, they're not... They feel like they're on this track, and you can't lose 1 minute because you're going to get behind in this thing, you know, competition.
Right.
We're all competing, and
Well, that's where the basic you know, kind of flaw in our whole situation, according to Jose Arguelles, wrote a book called Time in the Technosphere, is our modern society going back 5,000 years is based on a misconception of time. Mm-hmm. Where we started this, you know, we originally, like, you know, in the sort of pre historic civilizations or societies, they were based on the lunar calendar, and they were completely attuned to natural cycles. When civilization began 5,000 years ago, we went to a 12-month calendar. I mean, months were originally moons, it's not following the natural order of the lunar cycles. So we began this kind of progressive desynchronization from natural harmonic structures. And what that does, according to Arguelles, is it desynchronizes and ultimately drives everybody in the culture insane. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're completely wired into an artificial timing frequency.
I
sat with Plato for a long time, and I think it's absolutely brilliant. I do think that's the basic underlying, you know, problem is a misorientation towards time on many levels.
I mean,
the way we think about time is kind of as a spatial extension. Like, we talk about amounts of time, having enough time, wasting time, running out of time. But if you actually really start to think about what time is, it's not a quantity at all. It's totally different. It's a kind of underlying element.
So then all those who are allowing this paradigm to exist right now in our society, the system that we have right now, are basically insane in some way.
Yeah, definitely.
If they are the truly insane.
Basically the whole system has gone systematically insane, and we're watching the end of this thing as it sort of catapults into the void.
And the vision I got when you were talking about the insanity is I saw a picture of President Bush, his wife, Condoleezza Rice, his father, and Clinton bending down in front of the body of the Pope. And
right.
To me, that the Pope is the epitome and the idol of holding the paradigm, this control mechanism that holds us locked in to the old ways of fear and of non-expansion, that he is the symbol of it.
Right.
And they're bending down in prayer to him,
right.
Adoration.
You know, one thing that's really great, in the book I'm arguing that these prophecies are coming to pass, that we are actually right now in the apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
And the word apocalypse literally means uncovering or revealing. And I think one thing that's really going on right now is that there's nothing hidden, you know, for those who want information, you know, through the internet, through the sort of growth in communication structures, you know, you can find out anything you want to find out. There's no way to hide any hypocrisy, any secret dealing, any secret affairs. You know, it's all completely out there now. So, you know, I think that's to the positive, and I think that human consciousness, you know, humanity is going to sort of rise to the occasion at a certain point. I mean, you know, when there have been events like, you know, the few days after 9/11 or the few weeks after 9/11 or when there was this blackout in New York, you know, you can feel this incredible surge of, you know, excitement and enthusiasm because people are really sick of this whole structure that we're in. I mean, they're over it. You know, they just they're just waiting for an opportunity to try something else.
Just to break out. We need to break out because we're in a box.
Yeah, but we can't break out. The point is that if we break out too soon, I mean, that's why I really see it. It's like it's like the process of fetal development, which is a very, you know, it's guided by chemical signals incredibly precisely. You know, I think on a planetary scale, we're in exactly the same situation. Because if you break out too early, you know, and you don't have those alternative paradigms, then there's just going to be collapse into chaos, you know.
Or an abortion of some kind.
What's that?
Or an abortion.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, you know, I think it's in a weird way. I mean, you know, as hard as it is to bear, like, you know, everything is happening as it has to happen. You know, I've sort of tried to reach a kind of non-dual perspective on it. I mean, it's, you know, it's absolutely pointless to demonize, you know, Bush and the administration or the corporations. I mean, that's absolutely a dead-end street. You just end up, you know, kind of in this negative framework. You know, I don't think that you know, any of those things are the problem. The problem is the individual sort of taking responsibility as much as they can and trying to transform the underlying values.
So we have to claim our power, we have to claim who we are, if we can. And then you spoke about synchronicities, to be able to see the signals, the signposts along our own inner landscape, and look within ourselves and see what is happening in the outer landscape, in the inner landscape, and then we know that there's a flow happening, that right, we are the flow.
And it's all kind of one, you know, I mean, it's all mm-hmm. it's all the same, really.
I like the birth metaphor, because mm-hmm. that goes, you know, then you know, how Rick Strassman, his idea that the 49 days is when we develop our third eye and everything. Yeah, I guess you're right. If we don't wait for our third eye and we go out without it, like, mm-hmm. we'll just be absolutely useless.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a warrior training ground, I think, right now in a lot of ways. I know. Do your listeners know a lot about DMT? Have you explained that before on the show?
We try to talk about it, and then we get interesting calls from the community.
Is there a website that we can announce for Daniel right now?
Oh, Daniel, right. Sorry, I'm getting this.
I have a website which is called BreakingOpenTheHead.com, and there's a really good, I mean, sometimes it's really good and sometimes it's not so good, discussion mm-hmm. board. But there are a lot of really smart people there. I've actually learned a lot from different folks who've come through. And the other website for the magazine is www.metacine.net.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It's great. It's
oh,
nice
cool.
to talk to you.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank
Thanks,
you for
yeah,
all your work.
Fun. Okay, yeah, anytime.
Okay, bye.
Bye.